There are actually a large number of cotton accessions that over the year have been identified by various people as having some level of resistance to root knot nematodes. The first one, Jackson Lindless, I found, it was quoted in another paper from something written by Orton in 1905. And I always liked this one because what Orton had to say, that there was little to recommend this cotton accession except that it had some nematode resistance. I have no idea whether you could find that accession in the collection today or not. But then we have the Cleveland 6 that you know, most of us are familiar with, the Wild Mexico Jack Jones. Shepherd in 1983 published on 18 primitive race stocks that had resistance. Boris Robinson, Ed Percival, looked specifically at collection from the Yucatan and identified 5 additional accessions that had root knot resistance. And then later on, McCarty et al. With those 24. And in California, we know Nemex, which came from the Acala C-225, is resistant, although we're still not exactly sure where that the original source of that resistance. Let's see. I need to back up. There it is. Okay. There has been relatively little work looking at inheritance of resistance to root knot in various cotton accessions. Not in the chronological order, but kind of a random order here. There are 2 specific reports dealing with Cleveland 6. One that says it is based on a single recessive gene, and another paper that says it's based on a single dominant gene. In the Auburn NM series that were developed by Ray Shepherd and his colleagues, in the first paper, Shepherd reported that Auburn 623, the first release from that effort, had transgressive segregation, more than 2 genes, and incomplete dominance. Later, a student in my lab, Zhao, looked at one of the M series, which was derived from the Auburn 623. And said it looked like it had 2 dominant genes. About the same time, McPherson and et al. Looked at M315 and M78. M315 said looked like 1 dominant, 1 additive gene, and M78 had 1 dominant gene. And that's not surprising that those 2 are different, as they do have different lineages derived from Auburn 634. So looks like the M78 ended up with only 1 of the 2 or more genes that were present initially in the series. And then recently, from Phil Roberts' lab in California, a nice paper on the Acala Nemec, which segregates as a single recessive gene, although really Phil has done a really nice job in that group looking at identifying transgressive factors that, depending on what you cross it with, you will end up with a higher level of resistance than in the original parent. So, given that we actually have a lot more sources of resistance than those few, and the fact that we have some confusion in the literature about the inheritance of resistance, I decided that, you know, behoove us to look at some additional accessions to see what we might have there, with the idea of, do we have the same few resistance genes repeated over and over again within the collection, or do we have a much broader base of sources of resistance? And I thought the easiest thing to do was take one small group, and for that I chose the 5 identified by Forrest and Ed Percival in 97 from the Yucatan, and have done this crossing series, including those 5 along with CW for Cleveland and WMJJ for Wild Mexico Jack Jones, and have done this crossing series. The X's in red are the ones that we've actually completed the analysis of. The X's that are in black are still in progress or yet to be planted. I will say that we tried to do some of this in the greenhouse, but really had to take everything to Mexico to make all of our crosses because of the photoperiodism within those materials. we have been looking at these by looking at, you know, very standard system where we look at the two parents and compare that to the F1 and an F2 group. In each individual test, we strive to have between 10 and 15 individuals of the F1s and the two parents, and approximately 60 ex-F2 individuals that we've looked at. And so this, I'm going to go through some of this data pretty quickly. It's going to get rather boring and monotonous looking at all of those graphs, so it gets a bit repetitive after a while. But to start with, this was Cleavewell by DP90, and looking at the upper bar graph, you know, where the F1 is not any different from the susceptible DP90 parent, really classic genetics, looks like a recessive trait. And then when you look at the segregation within the F2 population, it's, you really have a wide range. It doesn't break out very cleanly into anything. I have done something that I'm not sure is legal statistically or genetically, but I've done it anyway. I took the number of individuals within the test and said, well, if this was a single recessive gene, then to be significant, I'd have to have a ratio of X. And that's what that red line means, where it says one gene. So if I had one recessive gene in there, that would separate resistant and susceptible individuals. And considering that that's well below the level of resistance that's the mean for Cleavewell, I said, well, that doesn't fit very well. If I looked at two recessive genes using the same thing, that line is the dividing point between which is would be a statistically significant fit. And it's not real clear break there by any means, but it does seem to fit, say that there has got to be more than one recessive gene in there. And it, the two gene models fit better than one gene, and I didn't try to go any further than that. Again, this was the same exact type of analysis and data with the DP90 by Wild Mexico Jack Jones. And once again, in the F1, you have the highest level of nematode reproduction. Excuse me, all the resistance is based on eggs per gram of root in these studies. And again, it looks like it's a recessive trait, high level of susceptibility in the F1s. F2s go all over the place. And again, it doesn't fit a one gene recessive model very well. The two gene sits a little better at this point. Now, I did make one mistake when we were running these experiments. You know, I told my staff that when we do each one of those, we're going to do the two parents, the F1s, the F2s. And that's exactly what they did. When they brought me the data for this experiment, I looked at it and said, oh my gosh, I don't have a susceptible control in here. So for this particular one, I'm missing the DP90. But still, when you look at the two parents, the Cleavewell by Wild Mexico Jack Jones, this is the cross that was used to derive the Auburn 623 and everything after that. There is no difference in the resistance level between the Cleavewell, the Wild Mexico Jack Jones, and the F1s. And if you look at the F2s, there's a broad spread. But if you look on the your left of the bottom bar graph, you'll see some of those individuals have extremely high levels of reproduction. So there are some obvious differences in the genes for resistance that are carried by Cleavewell and Wild Mexico Jones, such that you have some susceptible individuals segregating out in the F2 population. Now, this is the first one with the accessions from Mexico, TX1440. In this case, you know, it wasn't very clear whether the F1 was a resistant, dominant or recessive trait because of all the variability in that particular test. But when you look at the F2s from that cross again, it seems to fit a one. The F2s look better for a one dominant gene than they do for two recessive genes in the way it segregates out. There are, again, a few very susceptible individuals in the population. When you cross it with Cleavewell, again, in this case, I'm looking mostly at the F2s. there are a few highly susceptible individuals within the population, suggesting that, if it's dominant, it's got to be a little bit different from cleave wilt. And when you cross the two, the F2s, you still get the segregation for a few susceptibles. Exactly the same parameter pattern comes out when you cross it with Wild Mexico Jack Jones. Very highly resistant F1s from this cross. Most of the F2s are highly resistant, but there are those very few very highly susceptible individuals. Now, for the rest of these, it's with the Yucatan, where I have data to this point, they all pretty much look like they're a dominant trait, as shown in this slide, with the TX2076 crossed with Delta Fine 90. You can see that that F1 is clearly much more resistant than the Delta Fine, and although it's statistically different in this particular test from the resistant parent, it's somewhat variable. You know, in other tests, you'll see that they're very similar. The F1's in the parent, resistant parent. Sort of fits a two dominant gene better than anything else at this point. Same trend when you cross it with cleave wilt. And you can see in this case, the F1's are actually more resistant than either one of the two resistant parents statistically, although they're pretty close together given the very, very low level of reproduction here. And so on. So, you know, we've gone through all this. I have several more to go through before I'm ready to reach any strong conclusions or more definitive conclusions, because I'm just talking and, you know, not being refereed at this point. I've taken a few liberties with my interpretations. And you're free to criticize me, as I know some of you will, on those at this point. But really what I want to get to, there's one test where there was no significant differences between the parents and the F1s. Here, I want to get to this one for the most part. So I'm somewhat surprised that both cleave wilt and Wild Mexican Jack Jones resistance seems to be inherited as a recessive trait, probably by governed by more than one gene in each of those two accessions. Seems pretty clear cut. All right, so how come, if that's the case, that when you get to Auburn in the M-series, where the resistance was derived from those two lines, the resistance is just about always at least one dominant gene? And I see Dr. McPherson sitting there in the audience as a plant breeder and geneticist. Can you help me answer this? Thank you. I'm not sure what's happening there. Resistance in the TX1440 and 2076 appears to be inherited as a dominant trait. In 2107, it's unclear at present. I've got to finish up what I'm doing. In general, though, the resistance in all of these accessions seems to be based on more than one gene. There's just no clear-cut case where it looks like a single gene in any of these accessions. Most of these appear to have at least some unique genes. While there may be a lot of overlap, most of these accessions we looked at so far, the fact that you have, whenever you cross two of these resistant parents together, you have a few very highly susceptible individuals, suggests that they can't be the same genes, or, you know, you cross two things with the same genes, you're going to end up with the same phenotype in the parent, as I understand genetics. So we must have some quite a number of unique genes within here. And lastly, so far in the, I need to again complete the work with 2079 and crossing with some of the others. There were no, this particular cross with either the cleave wilt or Wild Mexico Jack Jones, that's the only group so far where I detected no susceptible individuals within the F2 population. So, in summary, overall resistance, inheritance of resistance to root knot in most of these cotton accessions does not clearly follow any simple Mendelian model. Based on the work that Phil Roberts and his lab and group is doing with the Achalas, and he's actually trying to map the transgressive segregant factors that are in the populations. There's a lot of background effects, depending on the particular parent you use and what you're going to get out of it. There does seem to be a lot of recessive factors that influence these sources of resistance. And I think we have sufficient number of resistance, unique resistance genes within these populations that we can be fairly assured of some durability in the resistance phenotype over several years to go using different combinations of these sources of resistance. I have discussed this with my plant breeder colleague, Wayne Smith, and first question he asked me was, what about combining ability? And I said, what do you mean, what about combining ability? I'm more interested in virulence and durability. It is possible that there are sources of resistance that actually have better combining ability than the materials we've started with. You know, we've done a lot with stuff derived from wild Mexico Jack Jones and Cleve Wilt. They may not have been the best. At this point, I'm sort of interested in hopefully down the road determining maybe one or more of these sources of resistance will be a better parent, not in the better resistance, but less yield drag associated with it if we bring it forward. That's wild speculation at this point. And that concludes my remarks. Are there questions?
I have a quick question for you, Jim. Why in the world don't we have a truly root knot resistant variety?
All right,
based on the fact that we have had potential for years.
Mm-hmm. Well, up until recently, most plant breeders weren't particularly interested. And I have talked to several in the last 10 years, and they look at me and said, gosh, I'd love to, Jim, but when I get through doing, you know, earliness and fiber qualities and yield potential, I just simply don't have time. The big push now for most of us working on resistance is to get high throughput markers. And they pretty much assure us that once we can hand the breeder some high throughput markers for these sources of resistance, they'll start using them more effectively. They've made a lot of crosses with this material, but they don't reselect for resistance, so they come out with no resistance at the end. I mean, that's as I've interpreted now. Some of the breeders might disagree with me.
It's frustrating to us as nematologists, though, Jim. I can assure you that
we have all this good resistance in our germplasm and not have it out in cultivars. But then Acala is very good. People, you know, I've heard different opinions when they had LA887 available that it wasn't very resistant. Well, gosh, compared to most cottons, it was very resistant. It was very effective in my understanding where it was grown commercially. And the company decided, I guess, it wouldn't make enough money off that, so they don't carry it anymore. I don't know why. It's not available.
Any more questions for Jim? All right. Thank you very much, then.
Thank you.